Normally, a chov, a debt obligation, ends, is erased, when it is paid off. In this share, we discuss a number of other ways in which a chov can be erased. We have Shemitah's Ketafim. The Torah says, V'zeh dvar ha-shemitah shamot kol baal ma'ashe gadol ha'ashe yosheb re'ehu, lo yigoshes re'ehu v'esochiv yikara shemitah la'ashem. Shemitah erases debts. However, this halacha is of limited practical ramifications, b'zman hazeh, at least in Chutz La'aretz, for several reasons. First, because the minhag in Ashkenaz, the Masorah of Ashkenaz, is that Shemitah's Ketafim does not apply b'zman hazeh, at least in Chutz La'aretz. There's considerable debate and discussion since the time of the Rush about exactly why, but halacha l'maisa, poskim say, is that Shemitah's Ketafim does not apply b'zman hazeh in Chutz La'aretz. Even though we write prosbos, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that's a midas chasidus to be choshesh for the opinions that it does apply, but me'ikra din, the halacha is, according to many poskim of Ashkenaz, that Shemitah's Ketafim does not apply in Chutz La'aretz b'zman hazeh. Furthermore, of course, we have the option of writing a prosbol. Since Hillel instituted prosbol, prosbols are quite easy to arrange, and anybody who has a significant debt very likely would write a prosbol. So in practice, at least b'zman hazeh, at least for Ashkenazim and Chutz La'aretz, prosbol, or even for Sfardim, if they write a prosbol, so practically, Shemitah's Ketafim doesn't interfere with the ordinary course of business of debts all that much. A number of other ways in which debts can be erased. There is mechila. A person can waive a debt. A person can forgive a debt. The Malveh can say he forgives the debt. This is uncontroversial. Mechila is a mechanism that works according to all poskim. There is, however, debate as to how the mechila has to be done. Normally, mechila can be a mere verbal declaration. A person says, I hereby waive the debt, I mochel the debt, the debt is erased. There is a machlokas poskim, rishonim and achronim, whether if a debt has a loan document associated with it, a shtar chov, whether that debt can be erased by a mere verbal declaration without a kinyan, or whether, since it's a shtar chov, the debt is only erased if the shtar chov is returned, or if the mechila is done with a kinyan. So that's a machlokas. But an ordinary debt without a loan document can be erased by a simple verbal declaration without a kinyan. There is even a major machlokas achronim, whether a mental declaration can suffice to erase a debt. If a person thinks in his head, I am mochel the debt, does that work? That is a major machlokas achronim. Some achronim say, since we have a principle, dvarim shebelev, lo havidvarim, that ordinarily things that you think don't count, only things that you verbally express, or express in writing certainly, but even verbally express, only those things work. Things that you merely think in your head are dvarm shebelev lo avi dvarm, so mechila belev doesn't work. Other poskim say that a mechila belev, that anything belev that's not contradicted by something you say, if you say one thing and you think otherwise in your head, that's dvarm shebelev lo avi dvarm. But if a person thinks mechila and that is not contradicted by anything he states explicitly, some poskim say that mechila would work. So that is a major machlokes achronim. This actually has major ramifications. Obviously, if the malveh, if the creditor, doesn't admit he was mochel and it was only belayed, you're going to have a hard time proving it. But very often, you have an honest malveh, he admits he was mochel. So certainly if he admits that he was explicitly mochel, belayed, that becomes a major machlokes poskim. And if the loveh is muchsuk, he might very well be able to say kimli that the halacha is on his side, that he follows the view that mechila worked, and it would be difficult to make him pay back the debt. The practical question often is, what's called mechila? Very often the person says, he's having a hard time now, I'll forget the debt for a while, I won't bother him right now, he doesn't actually waive the debt. So very often it can be difficult to establish exactly whether the thought process of the malveh actually constitutes mechila or not. But if he had a clear, unequivocal mechila, even though it was belev, that is a major machlokes achronim. Many achronim say it does not work with varm shebelev, lo avidvarim, but there is an opinion in the poskim that even a mechila belev is sufficient to erase a debt. There's also a major machlokes about yeyush. The halacha is, in certain contexts, aveda, for example, lost property. If the owner, while the aveda is lost, he says, vayelech hasaron kis, I'm never going to find it again. He gives up hope, he's miyayesh on finding it, then finders keepers, whoever finds the Aveda may keep it, assuming that the yayesh occurred before the person found the Aveda. Once the person finds it, then it's too late, Yeyush no longer works. Yeyush works in certain cases in context of theft, of Gzela and Gneva. So there is a major machlokes aposkim, beginning with the tshuva of the Marik, as to whether Yeyush works with regard to a chov. If the creditor, if the holder of the debt is miyayish, I'm collecting it, he writes off the debt as a bad debt, he says, we're never going to get it back, it's hopeless, we're not going to collect this debt. He wasn't mochel, he just expressed his feeling, his opinion, that he's never going to get it back. Does that constitute, that's yeyush, does that erase the debt? So that is a machlok zaposki. The Marik rules that yeyush works. He brings a tshuva of a Rabbi Binyamin, the yeyush does not work, and the Marik says it depends what kind of yeyush. If it's a situation where yeyush is not necessarily warranted, and without hearing an explicit yeyush by the creditor, we wouldn't assume yeyush, then the Marik says that's where Rabbi Binyamin says yeyush b'chov doesn't work. But in a case where yeyush is presumed, where we typically would assume that a person in this situation, in this context of the debt, a person would be miyayish, just like Aveda, the Gemara has many circumstances in which we assume yeyush by default. So here too, in cases of chov where the debt is clearly bad and a person typically would be miyayish, the Marik says that yeyush works, and the Tzos HaChoshen sides with the Marik. Others disagree. The Chacham Tzvi and the Nesivos HaMishpat and other poskim reject the Marik. They say that no yeyush ever works in the context of a debt. That they argue that when it comes to things like aveda, as we mentioned earlier, it depends whether the yeyush occurred before or after someone found the aveda. Once the motzi aveda, the finder picks up the aveda, at that point the yeyush doesn't work, because since the person who found the aveda has an obligation to return it, that obligation prevents the yeyush from kicking in. He's bound to return it, and yeyush can no longer take effect. So the Chacham Tzvi argues, since the lova, the debtor, by definition, has an obligation to repay the debt, which commences as soon as the debt is made, as soon as the loan is made, therefore yeyush can never work. So the Chacham Tzvi, followed by the Nesivos, says that yeyush simply does not work in any context for a debt. Tzos HaChoshen, however, disagrees. The Tzos HaChoshen defends the Marik and says that yeyush does work for a debt. It's different from the case of aveda. So this is also a major machlokes achronim, whether yeyush works in the yeyush works to cancel debts. Statutes of limitations. In modern law, there are often statutes of limitations. They vary for different kinds of obligations, for debts in terms of loans, other obligations, both in civil and criminal cases, but even in civil cases, there are statutes of limitations that after a certain amount of time, if a debt is not pursued, then the debt, it can no longer be pursued. The debt, then you forfeit the debt. So what about halacha? Does halacha have any notion of a statute of limitations? So native halacha does not. Halacha itself contains no notion of statute of limitations. The closest thing we have, perhaps, is Shemitah's Ksachim, we mentioned earlier. Every seventh year, debts are erased. But as we mentioned, that's of limited practical significance for the reasons we mentioned earlier. Furthermore, the halacha is a person can stipulate when he makes a loan, the borrower, the lender can stipulate in the loan document, the loan agreement, that Shemitah, that they will not apply Shemitah to this debt. It depends exactly how you state it, but Mafkama Shekosta B'Torah B'Dover Shon Mamon T'no Akayim. So assuming you use the right formulation, Al Menashe Lo Tishmiteni B'Shvias, that we will not apply Shemitah to this debt, that works. So in any event, there is no statute of limitations in native halacha. Shemitah Ksafim doesn't apply commonly for a variety of reasons. In Ashkenaz it doesn't apply. According to Ashkenaz it doesn't apply. Bezman Hazeh and Chutz Laretz. Prusbul is easy. You can anyway stipulate in the loan documents, in the loan agreement, that Shemitah Ksafim shouldn't apply. The Gemara does say that if an almana, if a widow, is not tovah, she doesn't demand payment for a ksuva for 25 years, there's an implicit mechila. That only applies to almana and a ksuva. That's a very limited rule. It's not a statute of limitations in general. That halacha also is not really a statute of limitations per se. That's really a rule that we have implicit mechila. And that rule that we have implicit mechila, that's actually the source for some of the poskim that an unspoken mechila works. They say just like an almana who does nothing but simply refrains from asking for a ksuva for 25 years is presumed to have forgiven the debt. So you see, a nonverbal mechila works. So any nonverbal mechila works. Other poskim saying no, normally that would be Dvarim Shebalev. The reason the widow's failure to demand payment of Ruksuva works is because it's an umdana. It's clear, if she waits so long, 25 years, it's an umdana, belibo v'lev kaladam, her thought process is transparent, so that's why it works. Either way, that's not really a statute of limitations. That's simply a presumptive mechila, which works. So halacha does not have any intrinsic, any inherent notion of a statute of limitations. You can go for years, for decades. As long as you weren't mochel and you weren't miayish, you can go for 50 years and then come back and collect the debt. And the debt remains intact, remains collected. The question, of course, is whether halacha would incorporate secular law statutes of limitations via mechanisms such as din d'malchus adina, mechanisms such as minhag, either the din d'malchus adina that halacha recognizes the law of the land as binding on Jews, or the question of minhag, the idea that the prevailing custom sometimes becomes binding. We'll discuss both these mechanisms in more detail soon in the context of bankruptcy. The Pesach Choshen raises the question of whether minhag or din malchus adina could serve to validate, to render secular statute of limitations binding among Jews. He's inclined to the view that they do not. He's inclined to the view that they don't in the context of bankruptcy law either, as we'll discuss soon. But I haven't seen many postkin discuss this, but as we'll see, when it comes to bankruptcy, there is some debate about this, so maybe with regard to statutes of limitations as well. But in any event, the Pesach Choshen is the one discussion of statutes of limitations of which I'm aware. And he said, certainly, it's clear that halacha has no inherent notion of a statute of limitations, and he's skeptical that halacha would recognize them under mechanisms such as minhag or din malchus adina. One of the most controversial questions about how a debt can be erased is the question of bankruptcy law. In modern bankruptcy law, a person, an insolvent debtor, can file for bankruptcy discharge. He can file with the courts that he's bankrupt, he has insufficient assets to satisfy his outstanding obligations, and assuming certain criteria are met, the court will accept that. They'll seize his non-exempt assets and they'll transfer them to the creditors. They'll have to take some fraction of their debts. The rest of the debts are considered discharged. They no longer exist. Even if the debtor later comes into possession of more assets, doesn't matter. He has a fresh start. He has, might hurt his credit rating, but he no longer owes those obligations. That's modern bankruptcy law. So the question is, does halacha have any intrinsic notion of bankruptcy? Does halacha recognize secular bankruptcy law? So certainly halacha has no intrinsic notion of bankruptcy. Again, we discussed Shmitas Kesafim, but again, that's limited. That's not a general notion of bankruptcy. Halacha certainly has no internal mechanism of bankruptcy. The question is, does halacha recognize secular bankruptcy law under mechanisms such as minhag, the idea that the prevailing custom becomes binding in business dealings between Jews, and din malchus adina, the principle that the local prevailing law is binding under the Talmudic rule of din malchus adina? So both these mechanisms are discussed in the context of bankruptcy law. The question of minhag actually goes back some 400 or 500 years to the time of the Marshach, Rabbi Shlomo Cohen, one of the great Sfaradic poskim from nearly 500 years ago. The question of bankruptcy law from the perspective of din malchus adina is discussed more recently in the past century or so. So bankruptcy law, bankruptcy custom, from the perspective of minhag, was discussed extensively for centuries by the Sfaradic poskim. The Marashach has several tshuvos in which he says that certain arrangements, they weren't exactly the same as modern bankruptcy law, but certain arrangements by which an insolvent debtor would be given additional time to pay back the debt, he'd be given a schedule of payments. If a majority of creditors agreed to this procedure, it became binding, even on the minority of dissenting creditors. So it wasn't exactly modern bankruptcy, but it was also a system by which the creditors' rights were canceled without necessarily their assent. Even if certain creditors didn't agree, some of their rights, their right to get paid immediately when the loan was due, would be denied, would be dismissed. So the question is that valid? Halacha has no such notion. Halacha says a person can't pay, you take all his property. Misadrin l'bachov, they keep certain personal assets, certain business assets, but other than that, you take everything he has. So the question is, would halacha recognize these commercial customs as valid? The Marshach said yes. The Marshach and many poskim who followed in his footsteps, many Sfaradic poskim over the next several centuries, said that yes, we follow the minhag. Minhag is a powerful rule in halacha. Commercial dealings are regulated by minhag. If that's the minhag, even if that was a minhag that began among the non-Jews, poskim say, but if that's the minhag, then that becomes binding upon Jews as well. And this was the opinion, as we've said, of many Sfaradic poskim over the next several centuries. However, as we noted earlier, Marshak wasn't talking about a complete discharge, by which the debtor is completely freed permanently from some of his obligations. He was talking about a schedule of payments by which the debtor could hold on to some of his assets and not turn them over to the creditors immediately. He wasn't talking about an outright discharge. He didn't say one way or another. He didn't say whether Minhag would work in such a case or whether it wouldn't work. Several hundred years later, about 150 years ago, we find considerable dispute over this point among the great Sfardim of 150 years ago or so. Some poskim said, of course it does, why not? Whether or not the Minhag extended that far in the Rashach's time to a complete discharge is maybe not entirely clear. But today they said there is such a Minhag. The Minhag is that in certain cases, creditors have to agree to accept a certain percentage of their debts, you know, a certain number of cents on the dollar, so to speak, and the rest they have to just give up. That is the Minhag, they said, in their time, in their place, and that is binding, even though the Marshach didn't talk about that. Minhag can certainly do that as well. The Minhag has the power to do that, and therefore a number of Sephardic poskim ruled that Minhag can do that as well. There is a tshuva in the Chikrei Lev from about 200 years ago. He said that Marshach was not talking about a discharge, he was just talking about a payment schedule. But some of the Chikrei Lev's own children said, yeah, the Chikrei Lev, maybe that's true, the Marshach wasn't talking about that. And maybe in the Chikrei Lev's time, that was not the Minhag, but if that would be the Minhag, even the Chikrei Lev would agree, they say, that the Minhag would work for that as well. Because Minhag, that is within the power of Minhag. If there is a clear Minhag to that effect, that the loans are discharged in certain bankruptcy-like contexts, then Minhag would work for that as well. On the other hand, there was some poskim who disagreed. Some poskim felt a minhag can't go that far. There is such a thing as a minhag garua, a minhag which is unjust and deprives somebody of property unfairly, is we don't accept. Rav Chaim Palagi, a grandson of the Chikrei Lev, was of this opinion. He said, even if there would be such a minhag, he says, a minhag to steal, a minhag to be oker divrei Torah, to uproot divrei Torah, a minhag to be overal divrei Torah, a minhag that just runs roughshod over private property, that condones gzela, he says, telling a debtor he doesn't have to pay back the debt, even if he gets money in the future, that's outright gzela. Again, every minhag to some extent in Choshen Mishpat overrides private property rights, but it's one thing he says to delay payment, have a payment schedule, and so on, but to actually just erase a debt permanently, even if it comes into money, Chaim Palagi says that's unthinkable, it's gzela, and you can't have a minhag that does it. When it comes to applying Din Malchus Adina, for some reason these earlier Sfardim don't discuss Din Malchus Adina, but that was discussed by a number of Ashkenazi poskim in the past century. There is a major dispute among the poskim as to whether modern secular bankruptcy law should be recognized under Din Malchus Adina. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva where he says that it is. He says that much of the debate hinges around the broad and general debate. What is the scope of Din Malchus Adina? How far do we go? All the poskim say that doesn't mean that we just go to law school and read the law books and close the Gemara and Shulchan Aruch and ignore Halacha. There has to be some kind of limit. But the question is, where is that limit? Many poskim confess that the Halacha is very murky, very, very unclear. But one of the broadest interpretations of Din Malchus Adina is the one mentioned by the Ramah, that it doesn't have to be the direct interest of the government. Anything doesn't have to be limited. It's not limited to taxation and currency, which are the government prerogatives. Ramah takes a very expansive view and says anything which is for the general good of society, takanas b'nei medina, dinin malchusa is valid, is binding, even if there's no direct governmental interest. So according to the Ramah, some poskim argued that bankruptcy law would qualify. It's for the takanas b'nei medina. It's that there are a variety of reasons why academics and legislators have argued bankruptcy is a good idea. The primary reason, obviously, is that it gives the debtor a chance to dig himself out of the hole and start anew instead of being constantly burdened for the rest of his life by debts. It's even good for the creditors, maybe, because if they just keep pursuing every dollar he has, he'll never get any more money. He's just stuck in a trap. This way the person himself will get more money. The creditors will be careful how they allocate credit. It's good for society in general because the debtors will be able to become productive members of society. It'll prevent them from becoming engaged in criminal acts. So it's better all around. It's better, maybe it's not better for the creditor who's losing money right now, but otherwise the debtor might hide his assets and so on. So this is a procedure society believes is healthy for much of society, for society as a whole. So some poskim, notably Rav Moshe Feinstein, felt that it would be included under the rubric of Din Malchus Adina, Rav Moshe wasn't necessarily talking about a complete discharge. He was talking about various arrangements for the repayments of debts that might be different from Din Torah. But Rav Moshe's general argument that it's for the good of society might very well apply even to a bankruptcy discharge. A number of other poskim of the last century, however, reject this and take for granted, either explicitly or implicitly, that Din Malchus Adina cannot serve to legitimize bankruptcy discharges. The Talkes Yaakov, Rav Yaakov Breisch, talks about bankruptcy. He discusses Din Malchus Adina at some length and says that there are many different shitas, as we discussed, and even according to the broadest shita of the Ramah, he says it has to be something just for the benefit of society. He just dismisses this out of hand, similar to Rav Chaim Palagi. He just says that this is just gzela, this is just unfair, that even if the lova gets more money, even if the debtor gets assets in the future, he shouldn't have to pay back the debt. What's the fairness of that? What's the logic of that, he says. He doesn't really explain, but he just doesn't see any benefit to this. He says it's just not fair, and it's wrong, and therefore he says Din Malchus Adina would not encompass such a thing. Similarly, Michas Yitzchak, or Yitzchak Weiss, has a very brief tshuva, actually to the same questioner of Rav Shalom Yecheskel Reuben Halberstam, who asked the same question to both of them, apparently. And Rav Weiss has a very brief tshuva. He just kind of dismisses out of hand the notion that there's any halachic acceptance of bankruptcy rules. His only discussion is whether the creditor who didn't participate, and the law was, if he doesn't explicitly protest, he automatically signs on to whatever arrangement the court devises. So the question was, he hadn't protested. He said he didn't protest because he wanted to give the debtor a chance to avoid some of his other creditors. He didn't want to interfere with his bankruptcy, but he wasn't really mochel the debt. Rav Weiss just says, to say that if a person doesn't protest the bankruptcy, he forfeits his debt, is completely against Torah. He brings some earlier poskim, a Marsham and a Maril, who seem to say this. Marsham and some of the earlier poskim who seem to say this. Maril Lublin, who seem to say such a thing, that you can't just... You can't just erase a debt by saying he didn't protest. So Menachas Yitzchak also seems to take for granted that there's no Din Malchusa to just erase a debt based on modern law. So the Pesach Choshen as well says that he's skeptical that Din Malchusa would apply. There's no government benefit. He doesn't really address the fact that the Ramah seems to apply Din Malchusa Dina even when there's no government benefit. But he also inclines to the view that we don't see Din Malchusa Dina with regard to bankruptcy law. So Rav Moshe seems to say that we do. He wasn't discussing a discharge, but Rav Moshe seems to feel that we do. Rav Breisch, Rav Weiss, the Pesach Choshen say that we don't. However, more recently, Rav Asher Weiss has a long tshuva on bankruptcy, and he feels that we do. He begins by explaining the logic, the Hegyon Musari. He says why it's logical that if a person is genuinely declaring bankruptcy, there are strict rules to prevent its abuse. He genuinely can't afford to pay back his debts. It's to nobody's interest to just squeeze out every penny from him and to put him in this hole forever. The creditor is not going to gain anything by this. He doesn't have the money. So what are we going to accomplish by just preventing him from ever becoming an economically productive person, he says. So it's very logical, he says. Rav Asher then proceeds to discuss all the various shitas of Din Malchus Adina. He's inclined to the view that, I guess, typically for Rav Asher, it makes sense, it's logical, that something which has a Hegyon Musari, which is logical, he's inclined to the view that we would say Din Malchus Adina on it. Even though it's true, he says, some of the earlier Achronim just dismissed the notion of a discharge based on the law out of hand. He says, they were talking about cases where it was not just, it was not fair, it was arbitrary to erase the debt. Rav Asher says, classic for him, something which is widely agreed upon by modern governments, he says, it's something which is generally considered rational by reasonable modern governments, he says, it's unreasonable to say all that is just gzela and chamas, he says, something which has the support of modern society, he says, is widespread support. He says it's unreasonable to just call that gzela. The earlier poskim must have been talking about less reasonable forms of discharges. So Rav Asher himself is inclined to the view that Din Malchus Adina would legitimize modern bankruptcy. He also discusses minhag. He goes back and forth on minhag. He brings some of the earlier Sephardic poskim. But he is inclined to the view that with regard to Din Malchus Adina in particular, that would legitimize modern bankruptcy. Although he does bring as far at the end, a similar point is quoted in the name of Rav Moshe Heinemann, that both in terms of the law and in terms of the minhag, he says, the context might matter. Bankruptcy law, he says, primarily was intended to cover commercial loans, business investments, and so on, he says. It's a personal loan between people. There's an expectation that the people will behave with honor and try to pay back the debt. So various contemporary posts can make this point as well, certainly if we're dealing with Minhag, and even in terms of the law, Rav Asher says, we have to look at the context. If the context was a business-like context, where the parties enter the arrangement using with expectation that business-like norms will govern, then they do govern. And that's what the law intended, that bankruptcy should apply in those cases. But in cases where that are less business-like and formal and more personal, then Rav Asher, as well as other contemporary posts, can suggest there's more of an argument to say the law wasn't really intended for those cases, he assumes. And certainly, if we're talking about Minhagim, there might be less of a presumption by the parties that they would apply bankruptcy law in such cases. So there, Poskim are more reluctant to say that bankruptcy law will be binding between Jews.